It's Wednesday, which means it's time to talk our state's history.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
This Friday marks the 172nd anniversary of a uniquely Michigan milestone. On May 18th, 1846, Michigan became the first English-speaking government in the world to pass a measure to abolish the death penalty. Here with us now to discuss Michigan's progressive past is a state archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
Also joining us now is the senior United States District Judge for the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan. He graduated from the University of Michigan Law School in 1949. He was admitted to the Michigan State Bar later that year. President Jimmy Carter appointed him to the federal bench in September of 1979. It is a pleasure to welcome Judge Avern Cohn to Stateside. Judge Cohn, it's so good to have you with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Good to have you, especially your historic and legal context. Mark, I'm going to start with some background with you. First, Michigan banned the death penalty in 1846, about 10 years after becoming the 26th state in the Union. Was capital punishment common prior to that ban?
No, it wasn't, considering the time period. The first recorded case of capital punishment by Europeans in the region was a French execution in 1683. And typically, even when someone was convicted and sentenced to execution, they would be transported to Montreal for the actual execution. There were only 7 known cases of capital punishment in the territory that we know as Michigan now prior to 1805, when Michigan became an official territory. And only 6 more after territorial status between 1805 and 1846, when Michigan became the first state to ban it. I think it's interesting to note that of those 13 executions, 7 were Native Americans, 5 Caucasians, and 2 women, including 1 unnamed slave.
And I know around the time of statehood, there were a couple of executions that happened that, kind of looking back, they're cited as a turning point on changing Michiganders' view of the death penalty. What were those cases?
Yeah, I don't know if that is hindsight or not, but we can continue to debate that. But there were a couple notable cases. The first included Patrick Fitzpatrick, a Detroiter living in Windsor. In 1828, he was accused of raping and killing an innkeeper's daughter in Windsor. He was tried, convicted, and executed. 7 years later, in 1835, Fitzpatrick's former roommate confessed on his deathbed to the murder. So, innocent man executed. And then in 1830, before Michigan was admitted to the Union, Detroiter Stephen Simmons reportedly came home drunk, had a dispute with his wife because she wouldn't continue to drink with him, and punched her so hard in the abdomen that she died. The scene was witnessed by their 2 daughters. Once sober, Simmons was beside himself with grief and repentance. He was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death. This was the last known public execution in Michigan, not only the last state-sponsored execution, but the last public execution, and it was a spectacle. They set up gallows and seating. It was quite the event. Wayne County Sheriff Thomas Knapp refused to carry out the act, so our territorial governor, Lewis Cass, had to find somebody to carry forward the execution, and he tapped Benjamin Woodward as the temporary sheriff to do that. When asked for his last words, Simmons began singing a repentant spiritual hymn, and it's thought that this, you know, changed the festive mood of the occasion to something pretty somber, although that's just conjecture again. But it left this lasting imprint on that idea of public execution.
So how did the political movement then get rolling to ban the death penalty in Michigan? Was there like a coalition of unlikely partners, or did everybody kind of unite under the sense that the morally correct thing to do was to not put people to death? Judge Cohn.
Well, in 1846, the legislature asked a lawyer from Oakland County to collect and revise the criminal code for the state, which was scattered through the books. He submitted a comprehensive revision of the criminal code and included a provision in that the penalty for murder was life imprisonment. That, by implication, abolished the death penalty for murder. He did not exclude treason. So in 1846, when the legislature adopted the revised criminal code, it included a provision that the penalty for treason, state treason, was death, and all the other penalties similar stopped at life in prison. It went through the legislature without any great difficulty. I think the reason why it was at ease was the execution in Windsor shook everybody up because they discovered that they had executed an innocent man. So from 1846 forward, the penalty for first-degree murder was life in prison. There were several attempts after that to restore the death penalty for murder, and none of them got very far. In 1931, the legislature passed a statute that restored the death penalty for murder, but provided that there would be a public referendum. And in 1931, in a general election, that provision was rejected by the voters.
So the public was saying, no, we don't want this.
We don't want this. In 1963, when Magwin proposed that it be inserted in the state constitution, it also affected the penalty for treason, which had been on the books but never been used. And so when the new constitution was adopted, it forbade the death penalty for any crime.
And Mark, the reaffirmation of abolishing the death penalty in Michigan's 1963 constitution, that had broad support from both political parties?
It had overwhelming bipartisan support, passing 108-3. This was a convention opened by former President Dwight D. Eisenhower. He gave the opening speech, and nearly two-thirds of the delegates were Republicans. So by today's standards, where we typically think of red states as being pro-capital punishment, this was unique.
And as we know, Judge Cohn, the federal government could and can continue to execute people within our state. Judge Cohn, would you tell us about a federal case in the 1930s that involved a man named Anthony Chebatoris?
Yes. Anthony Chebatoris attempted to rob a bank in Midland, Michigan, and in a shootout with the police, Chebatoris killed, I believe, a police officer. I'm not sure. He was then charged with first-degree murder under federal law, because robbing a bank was a federal crime. From the time the crime occurred until the time Chebatoris was convicted was about 31 days. And under the concept of dual sovereignty, that the United States is a separate sovereign from the state, you could have the death penalty under federal law. It took about a year, though, after he was convicted and sentenced, for the conviction to be affirmed. And he was then taken to Milan, where the execution took place. There was an effort to stop it on the grounds that the federal government should not conduct an execution in a state where, under the state public policy, it was forbidden. But the federal government persisted, and Chebatoris was then hung at Milan, Michigan. That's the only death that has occurred under federal law in Michigan. There is a case in the Western District of Michigan, a man by the name of Marvin Gabrion, who in 2002 was convicted of murder of a woman in a national forest, which made it a federal crime. The jury in that case had to decide first whether or not Gabrion was guilty of first-degree murder. In a separate hearing, the jury then said he should be executed for it. The case went to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction, and to my knowledge, he has yet to be executed, although it was ordered 20 years ago. And I'm not sure of the current status of the Gabrion case, but the judge who tried the case, now retired, was quoted as saying he doubted that the execution would ever be carried out. Hmm. If the execution is carried out, he will be sent to a federal prison in Terre Haute, Indiana, where they have facilities for implementing the death penalty. But after 20 years after trial, it seems to me that it's doubtful that he will ever be executed.
Judge Cohn, you've been a Michigander for over 90 years. You have, you know, watched history through the decades. Why do you think some of your fellow citizens have tried at times to revive capital punishment in Michigan?
Well, every time you get an incident where a police officer or a young child or somebody is murdered, the public are aroused and don't think that that person should be allowed to live. However, there's been very little substantive movement to restore the death penalty. I believe in 2015, Attorney General Schuette suggested that it might be reconsidered in the case of a murder of a police officer, but his efforts got nowhere. The fact is, so far as I can tell, the public attitude is we've never had it, people aren't familiar with it, and there's just no particular desire to see it restored. I, about 10, 15 years ago, had a death penalty case on my docket, and I impaneled a jury for the case and then asked prospective jurors questions about their attitude towards the death penalty. Most of them gave me a blank look initially because they had just never thought about it. The people in Michigan just aren't interested in it.
It sounds like a lot of tradition over the years, as you say. It just is something that seems alien to most people's minds.
It's alien to all of us.
Well, we have terrific legal and judicial perspective from you. We want to thank you so much, Federal Judge Averyn Cohn. And also thank you to the State Archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, giving us context as Michigan marks the 172nd anniversary of being the first English-speaking government in the world to vote and pass a law abolishing the death penalty. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Cynthia.